Hey guys, real quick before we jump into this next episode, I want to discuss something with you. I made a decision a couple of years ago not to bombard this podcast with tons of ads or just bombard you with sponsorship. Nothing would drive me more crazy when listening to other podcasts when the first 5 minutes were nothing but ads. So I worked hard not to do that to you. I try to keep the ads to a minimum and keep the podcast as streamlined as possible. So do me a favor. Go check out Phoenix Shooting Bags. Buy yourself a bag. Up your shooting game. You're going to thank me. And if you're not a rifle hunter, go buy yourself a glassing pad. Your butt is going to thank me after spending hours behind the glass. They're awesome. If you use promo code John Stallone, all one word, you'll save 20%. And lastly, please, I know you heard me say it, iTunes, Podbean, go leave us a review. I need the feedback. The ratings help me reach more people, and it helps me keep this free. So do me a favor, check out Phoenix Shooting Bags, and go leave us a review. Thank you. Let's roll into this next episode. Hi, welcome to the Interviews with the Hunting Masters, brought to you by Phoenix Shooting Bags. Today we're going to do something a little different. We have Mr. Phoenix Shooting Bag himself on with us, and we're talking to Shannon Mobbs and Corey Ford of Angry Spike. And Anthony and I are going to be going do a little Rosie hunting with those boys this September. So Anthony had a bunch of questions that he thought you guys could benefit from. Instead of just asking them, he figured we'd do a podcast about it.
Awesome.
So, what's up, guys?
Sounds good to me. Cool. But we don't get questions when you guys get here, right?
That's it. No questions.
They're all out of the way.
But get them all out now, Ant.
All right, no problem. Yep.
I got. Once you get here, you're expected to be expert.
Well, yeah. I'm with John all the time, so I become an expert just by his knowledge. I'm
oh, yeah, yeah. <Dick Right. head. laughs>
Oh, man. Well, listen, guys, I appreciate you guys spending time with me right now just to be able to talk and answer a few of these questions. I went on and saw a bunch of your videos. All the listeners out there, go and check out everything that's on YouTube. I mean, go to Angry Spike Productions. And I was just watching video after video after video, and your freaking terrain is horrendous. I don't know how you're able to make a shot in that freaking, this tree's everywhere. I see you guys like barreling through these moss paths. I mean, I can't believe that you're able to even make a shot. So my whole thing is this: you guys are going uphill, downhill, and you guys are like beating through all this brush. And I kind of wanted to figure out first, I wanted to touch base on gear. All right. Because, not that John didn't explain to me what to bring, but while I was watching your guys' videos, I never saw you guys once in rain gear, and John said that's all he was in rain. So, touch base on me on the clothing style. Are you guys even wearing rain gear? Because I didn't even see you guys wearing rain gear once.
Well, I'd rather not wear rain gear. So,
yeah.
Hunting's better when it's not raining, so I try to... Yeah, usually in September we get some nice days, so we hit it real hard when it's decent out. When it's raining real hard, we do what we did with Jones there, and that's just wait for a break in it. You know, the elk, they don't really respond very well when it's windy and rainy, so I'd rather hunt them when they're more likely to come in. So, you know, if you take rain gear, you tend to get in the rain. If you don't have it, you tend not to.
I got you.
That's true. And you know, last year, you know, we were in a scenario too with John there, you know, we'll have pretty much the entire season, so we can be selective on not hunting in the rain, knowing that we still got a lot of days. And John was there, you know, you guys will have limited amount of time, and it just happened that the first couple of days were nice. And then after that, it got pretty crummy on us. And so You know, we're kind of forced to hunt in the rain, knowing that John's on a timeline and we're trying to kill an animal. And there was definitely a point in time where I had to break my tarp out, and John and I sat under that in the bottom of a canyon. Well, it just absolutely torrential downpoured on us. And we had a bull that was probably, I don't know what, John, maybe at most of the time, 300 within 200 to 300 yards from us.
Oh yeah, for sure.
But we just couldn't do anything.
That was pussy bull.
Yep. That was him. He did not want to play.
Every time we get in on him, like, I mean, I don't know how many times we got to like 70 yards, and he'd stand there till about 70 yards, and then he'd like, fuck this shit, I'm taking the cows and going, and he'd only go like 150, 200 yards away. It's not like he like ran out of the canyon, so I don't think we were spooking him. I just think he was being a puss, and he didn't want to fight.
Yep.
I would have thought if we had bumped him, you know, or they got wind of us, that he would have got the hell out of Dodge completely. But I don't know. I mean, yeah. You guys know better than me.
Yeah.
Oh, typically that's what
you had him.
If they wind you, they'll blow out.
Yeah.
And then typically and you had him at 50 yards.
Wind. Yep.
John had him at 50 yards with cows between us and the bull, and that thing wouldn't come in, you know. So it was just real odd. You didn't have a shot, unfortunately, because of where we were standing at that point in time. But,
no.
You know, normal situation, he'll blow his cows out of the way to get to us to defend them.
Yeah.
So bring rain gear. Nice... I think that's what you want.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. Listen, it.
Yeah.
You're going with me. It's going to rain.
Got you. No, I with every. Listen, guys. If John says he's the black cloud, it's the freaking truth. No joke. Everything bad can happen. Always happens with John. I love him, but every time we're going on a hunt with John, the worst always does happen. So, all right. So bring rain gear.
Unless I'm guiding you.
Yeah, that's different. If he doesn't have a tag in the
pot. If I don't have my, I gotta have my own tag. Right. That's why that's why I've killed a bunch of 100-inch coos bucks with other people, me guiding, and not killed one myself.
All right. So, basically, another thing, what's in your, like, your guys' pack? I wanted, last time I was on a crazy expedition elk hunt, I had so much shit in my pack. We were up in Colorado, and I was hiking out to 12,000, 11,000 feet, and my legs, by the time I was done, not that I didn't train for it, but going to that elevation and what have you, I feel like John said that we're not going to be, you know, camping out, and we're going to be staying in probably a hotel. I wanted to think, basically all I wanted to carry in my pack was water. I wanted to get, just have a knife and radio and GPS. Am I good to go? I mean, obviously I'm going to carry a med kit, but other than that, do I need anything that you think I should carry besides rain gear, or I want to be as light as possible. I feel like when I'm hunting with my bow, especially like when I'm doing mule deer hunts and what have you out here, if I have nothing, if I'm light, I'm way better on my legs. I'm quicker. I'm more agile. I'm, you know, so what are you guys carrying? What should I be thinking to carry? How should I be training kind of like with, you know, with the pack? If 20 pounds is what you think is going to be in my pack, I'm going to train with 25, 30. So what are you guys carrying? What do you think I should carry?
Go ahead.
Food. I'd probably go with food. kill kit. I mean, you're gonna want knife, bag, game bags, simple things like that. You know, we do most of our stuff in and out of vehicles. I'm sure John's told you, once you drop into a canyon, you could be out pretty much all day, but for the most part, just what you're gonna need on your back for the day. You don't have to necessarily think about overnight survival or, you know, horrible cold weather temp swings or anything like that. It's just, you know, bring what you would need to take care of an animal once it's on the ground and get it out. Probably the easiest thing. And then food. I mean, you know, eat many lunches in the rig, but you could also eat them in the bottom of a canyon too. So nice. You don't need anything super special. You don't need to pack anything real heavy.
Okay, so I could go as light as possible and be good.
So absolutely.
Are you guys carrying like radios and what have you? Are the radios even work out there in that jungle? I mean,
not very good. We typically don't carry radios. I mean, I carry a GPS.
Okay.
Because I'm kind of old school. Corey, he don't even have that. I know he uses his phone on X or whatnot. And
does any
you know, we use Google Earth a lot, navigating the canyons and whatnot. So you know, we don't need a lot of stuff when we drop down in. Typically, where you drop down in, you come back out of. So, and it's within a day. You know, we're not going any more than say 2,500 feet down. We just okay. don't hunt. We don't have the elevation here on the coast.
Yeah, I got you.
Yeah, I mean, what's the tallest peaks over there? I mean, 3,000 or something like that. They're not.
Yeah, on the coast, it's like 4,200 feet.
Yeah.
That's like the tallest, but we're nowhere near that, you know. I mean, it's steep. Don't get me wrong. It's brutal stuff.
Oh, yeah, it's shitty.
You can't see the ground, so you're tripping over everything. So you're wading through ferns and salmonberry and huckleberry and sticker bushes. And it's a brutal place, but, you know, also what comes with that is the beauty. It's a beautiful place.
Okay, so another question on that. And we come from New York, so there's a crap ton of ticks. Should I be worried? Should I get everything tick ready? Or you guys don't have that many ticks out there? Because we don't really worry about ticks out here in Arizona. And I just wanted to know, should I be like worried about that kind of stuff or not really?
On the wet side, you don't have to worry about ticks. Every now and then we'll see one, but they're just not. I've never pulled a tick off me here on the west side of Oregon or Washington, so... Whether that's lucky or not, they're here. They're not that prominent.
They're not very tall, so they drown in a raindrop.
Yeah.
It's always freaking wet over there. It's not great environment for them, I would imagine.
No. Yeah, but you can bug spray maybe if you want, if you got some stuff that you... But we don't deal with a whole lot of bugs that time of year. Mosquitoes can get bad. But
well, the
no-see-ums,
the
worst part.
No-see-ums and mosquitoes can be very annoying. You know, they're not really a danger, but they are super annoying.
I don't care. We have the black flies and the freaking mosquitoes out here. So I just want to think of things that I'm not used to, especially, you know, the stuff that we deal out here. We deal with diamondbacks, you know, rattlesnakes and... You know, scorpions and black widows. I know over there there's a shit ton of freaking crazy spiders and spider webs. But I'm not worried about that. I want to make sure that I'm coming home to the kids without, you know, getting killed by something.
Yeah, your biggest threat here is falling down and you know, breaking a leg or something like that, because you just can't. You know, a lot of places you're not seeing the dirt you're standing on because of the underbrush. So you're wading through it, and if you're on a hillside and you trip, you can. You know, you can get hurt here, no question about it. And that's why we just take our time, and you know, we're never in a huge rush to get anywhere, other than when a bull's screaming at us, and then we're strategically trying to hurry up and get close to him. But there's no reason to get in a super super big rushes, and that's when people usually get hurt. So
no, I try not to do
that. Yeah, it's definitely an ankle twister, knee twister type environment. Your feet, I feel like your feet are always going into a hole of some sort, you know, either stuck between
the
branches.
Ground.
Yeah, it's pretty nasty in that from that perspective.
So
and if you're with me, because I got a bad knee, so I always take the easiest route. So.
I'm with you on that.
Yeah, you can keep up with me. Yeah.
So talking about like feet.
I like straight lines.
Yeah. So yep. Talking about like footwear, like what do you guys, what kind of type of boots are you guys wearing? Like a hard sole? Are you guys wearing soft sole? What are you guys like typically wearing? Because I'm kind of like taking, this is going to be a mix of Colorado and South Carolina a little bit.
the swamp meets the mountain. Yeah.
Because when I was in Colorado, every freaking I want to see down timber that I would put my foot on. In Arizona, you know, it's solid. It doesn't like eat away.
Rot away, yeah.
And then next thing you know, I freaking put my foot on this damn log thinking I'm going to climb over it. And I put my foot through it and I'm freaking tumbling down the mountain. And I can't tell you, I probably fell 20, 25 times out in Colorado in 14 days. And I was like, I felt like... I was like a little kid, like didn't know how to even keep my feet on my so I just want to, that's what I'm looking how like
it's your, like that
your videos.
It is, yes. But it's even, I'd say, kind of worse than that.
Yeah,
because,
it's slippery.
You know, a lot of times it's, it's damp and wet. So you think that's a nice hard surface to stand on. Well, you stand on it and your foot slides out from underneath you and you're sliding down a log. That's that can get you in a bad spot, too.
All right, so
yeah, we usually try to climb or step over things versus stepping on them.
Right, so are you guys typically holding your bows in your hand, or are you guys like strapping to your pack, and then, you know, when you get close to a bull, then because usually here in Arizona, I'm always carrying my bow in my hand, and I never put it to my pack. I didn't know some of these guys are carrying like slings with the bow nowadays. I don't know if that's something that I should get to, like, you know, come down there, or should I just do old school hand? I just want to know what how I'm gonna get my gear together. Like, should I just strap it to the pack?
If you have the ability, so we use the bow snatchers. Mm-hmm. The bow hooks right on our pack. And a lot of times when you're climbing these hills or even going down, you want both hands. So being able to put your bow on your back is definitely a benefit. If we're heading into a bull, you know, usually you got your bow in your hand, because things can materialize really fast in this country. Something may sound a long ways away, but it's actually relatively close. So you're always ready when you're heading to a bull. But when you're heading back up out of the canyon, being able to put your bow on your back is a huge benefit.
Okay.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah,
bow snatcher is nice because it gives us instant on and off. It's not like it's strapped to your pack. It's just a quick disconnect tool that you can just reach back and grab it and go. And when you're climbing down, like Shannon said, if you need both hands, it is really handy to have. So that's one tool that we've found that works really, really well for us. And we even use it when we're coosier hunting, because you don't need your hands to carry your bow all the time when, you know, cold Arizona mornings when you're walking around. You keep them in your pockets where they're warm and your bow on your back. But literally within seconds, you can have that thing off without the help of anybody else and ready to go.
Okay, good to know. Good to know. All right. So, let's get into
Anthony, let me say something real quick about the boots too. We typically usually will run a couple of different pairs. If it's warm out, we're running a lighter pair. If you know it's going to be 75, 80 degrees and you got a chance and it's, you know, high humidity, you're going to want a lighter pair of boots. Something that's, it doesn't have to be super, super supportive, but you don't want them scorching hot either. And then if it does cool down and it is going to be wet, you will usually boot up a little bit and go with something a little more rugged. Just kind of based on what the weather conditions and terrain are giving us.
Okay.
Yeah, for sure. And even if it's wet, you have a couple pair of boots, you can swap them in and out, so you're not always running a wet boot, which stretches it out and, you know, basically makes it not waterproof when you're working them too hard. So being able to let your boots dry is nice. So I would highly recommend a couple pair of boots.
So John was actually saying he's going to take three pair this year. He said last year enough two. Did I take three, or do you think two would be enough?
It all depends on the weather, bro.
I'll be honest with you. I have like four pair with me, but I have a camper too, mm-hmm. so I have the ability to do that. I don't necessarily take more than one pair hunting, but. You know, I go back to camp, I can switch my boots out to a dry pair every morning.
Okay, so I'm taking
three. Yeah, or a pair to match the weather or where we're going, you know. That's the other thing, too. We have some days we know we're going to be hiking a bit, so I'll want a little more of a hiking boot than I will, you know, just a, you know, a little more rugged hiking boot rather than just a kind of a high top, you know, almost tennis shoe, which if you're going to be really, really light, that's the way to go. But
I feel like if
and obviously what's comfortable, got to be comfortable.
Yeah, I think if I wore like the tennis shoe, I have this Hoka, I feel like I'll be slipping and sliding down there. I don't think it's gonna hold up.
Low top tennis shoe, you're getting dirt in it. You're just gonna fill it full of dirt because our dirt's real soft here. So when you step, you're sinking, you know, a lot of times a couple inches in dirt, and it'll just pour over the top of your low cut shoe, and then you're digging dirt out of your shoe. But
every day. Okay.
All right, gators are a good thing.
I'm definitely bringing. I got three pairs right now. That's what I'm. Or maybe I'm gonna even bring four. But that's definitely
four pairs of gators.
Yeah, if they get
a pair of gators could prevent the dirt from getting in there for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So another question of mine was broadheads. Now I use those Rage tripans like last year, and that freaking thing is deadly. I love it. But I'm just looking at that terrain, and I've been like listening to you guys about those Valkyrie. You guys have the Valkyrie system, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
You think right now I'm shooting 440 grains right now. I don't want to switch up my setup, but am I? Because I don't want to like mess anything up. But you think the Rage Tripans, we could use those out there? They're mechanical. They're not cut on contact. I mean, it's cut on contact, but it's not like a, you have a one.
Not a fixed blade.
Yeah, it's not a fixed blade.
Yeah.
What's
my, well, tell what you, I would say is don't at this do, point, yeah, don't change up anything.
Yeah.
So John was saying last year you guys weren't able to use a mechanical. Are you able to use it this year?
But they can't change the Oregon 2 years ago, right, Shannon?
Yeah. It was 1 or 2 years ago, yeah. But, you know, elk's a big animal. You know, there's a lot of hide to get through. They're just a massive creature. And you mentioned earlier how thick it is here. And we went to these real heavy setups because of deflection.
Yeah, I watched that steering wheel video of you guys, and I heard the last podcast with you and John, and now I'm like, after watching the videos, because I never thought in my life I'd come to Oregon and hunt Roosevelts, but you know, John's like, hey, you know, you gotta come with me, and you know, I was actually asking him because I need to get out of this state for a while. I need to clear the head. So that's why I'm now, but now after watching those videos, I was like, damn, that thing is nasty over there. So I wanted to make sure that I don't want to have a deflection like you and feel like garbage, you know, like that video, like you were saying with that steering wheel video. And that's the last thing. I have zero, I guess, luck with elk. They're like my nemesis. So
yeah, Anthony's shot a few good bulls and not, unfortunately, not taking them home. And
why do you think that is? I mean, is that penetration? Is that hitting something?
Yeah, honestly, that one really big one in that he shot in 6B a few years ago. It was that long ago now? Jesus
six
Christ! Years,
but I shot it perfect. I mean, the blood trail was.
It started raining. They went back to camp, then it started raining really hard, and then they went back and screwed up the blood trail. So, you know, I don't know.
I look for that bull for almost.
The other one that you shot with me, you shot him high. So it
was a bad shot. I mean, that was me getting excited. I mean, I've killed cows, and I have no issues. I've killed 3 cows, so it's not like I haven't killed an elk before. I just have no luck killing a bull. I have not had. I mean, I've called in a bunch of bulls for everybody else because I never have a tag. But when I went to Colorado, I pulled back my bow one time and I didn't even fling an arrow. So it's not that I just don't want to. I want to make sure when I'm going to kill something, it's going to get. I want to make sure it's a good shot. And I've been watching the video.
Yeah.
I was doing like those frontals, and I'm confident in my shot. You know, I practice. Me and John practice a lot. It's not that I haven't been hunting forever. I've been hunting for 20 years with the bow. But for some reason, the damn freaking elk has got my number right now.
Well, my advice Anthony, would be... Oh, go ahead, Shannon.
No, go ahead, Corey.
Oh, I was just going to say, my advice is at this point in the game, I wouldn't change anything up. If you shoot what you feel comfortable shooting. And there are scenarios, like the one of the bulls that we were on last year that John got. What was that, like a 52-yard shot, John?
Yeah.
50, it was 50 or something like that, you know? So, I mean, there are opportunities to shoot long distances. It doesn't all have to be close encounter or real close encounter, but, you know, if you're going to be comfortable shooting one broadhead, then don't at this point try to change anything up.
Okay.
Because you want to shoot what you are comfortable with, that you know, you can execute a good shot on and have good shot placement. That's the biggest key at this point. You know, if deflection happens, then you're going to reevaluate your equipment moving forward, especially for Roosevelts. But right now, I would just focus on making sure that you're shooting well before you ever step in the woods.
Yeah, no, my shot. I'm not going to pat myself on the back, but no, I'm good. I'm good out to 80, so I know I'm not going to get an 80-yard shot out there. We practice. I mean, my slider goes out to 100. We practice out to 100 out here, So for me, for a 40 or 50 yard shot, if I can't make that, I mean, I shouldn't be hunting as is. And typical shots to you guys are probably like 20 to 30 yards that it looked like, I mean, or 40 yards. And 40 yards to us is like a chip shot. And if I can't make a chip shot, I shouldn't be hunting. So
On average, our shot's no more than 20. But, you know, it's a shot placement thing more so than hitting your target. It's hitting it exactly where you want and shooting through a small window. And you just have to be able to focus in and out of your target and understand all the obstacles.
Yeah,
which is super hard to do. It sounds easy, but in that moment, it is extremely hard to teach yourself to identify that little twig that's 5 yards in front of you, because you're staring at 20 yards and a massive creature standing there. So, I don't know. It takes failure, I guess, in order to really figure out that. And, you know, we went to this heavy setup to try to prepare for that when you don't identify all those obstacles. And it's worked to some degree. You're not going to bust through an alder tree to get to an elk. So you still have to, you know, pay attention to what you're shooting around and through.
No, I think your videos like are golden. I've learned a lot just watching those. I was happy to be able to just go on YouTube and just look at you guys hunt. It made a lot of the questions that I had prior. I was like, oh, I don't even need to ask that. I already got the answer by just watching those videos, which is great. One of the questions I was wanting to know, because I really don't want to be a burden to anybody, and I don't want to take away from anybody's hunt. So I'm planning on actually my thought process is going to be hunting solo, because I want John to go with you guys. And what my plan is to hunt with you guys for one day and not even hunt. I just want to watch what you guys do. And I excel. I feel like when I watch somebody else at their craft, see what they do, and then just bring that in the field with myself. I mean, John has seen me do that with antelope. I just followed him for 2 days and then boom, went on my own and did my thing. Like this year, same thing. You know, I've watched John for years killing mule deer by himself, and I went by myself and, you know, killed a mule deer by myself for the first time. So my thing is, I want to know how I know you were talking with John and saying you guys drive the roads and find fresh rubs and then you go from there. Explain to me a little bit more on like what your process on that. Are you just driving the roads and looking for that, or are you guys you're driving down the road a little bit and then getting down underneath and looking for those rubs? Like, explain to me a little bit on what the process is on how you really do this tactic.
Yeah, I can elaborate on that. So John was with us in an area that we know pretty well, so we kind of know where the elk are, and we, in certain spots, we expect to see sign when there's a bull in that area. But we were more strategically going to places with John. If I'm in an area I haven't been before, kind of what you're going to be everywhere we go there, you're just going to be analyzing all the sign you see from whether you're walking, you're riding a bike, or you're driving down a road. You're just analyzing all the sign. That's the trails, and then that's just all the sign in and on the side of the road. And then rubs, for us, tells us it's a bull. He's there. He's active, you know, he's marking his territory. He's, and you can oftentimes tell how big the bull is by the right rub anyway, and how aggressive he is and how many rubs he's leaving in a certain area. So, you know, more than anything, that's what we look for. But looking for sign when you're in a new area, and that's just trails and rubs, all that stuff, is how you're going to identify an area you want to spend more time in and start picking it apart to find this bull. And I would say if you're doing it by yourself, what you really need is a good GPS, a good topo map. And this country can just suck you in. And if you're down the road not paying attention where you came from, you can just drive around in circles out there until you're out of gas. So knowing where you came from, knowing where you're going is very important in this area.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's roads everywhere, Ant. There's a lot of roads,
yeah.
And there's little, like ones that are not really active,
that, you know, you can go down and all of a sudden the fauna, you know, closes in on you. Like it's a different experience, man. I mean, I know over here in RL country, we have a shit ton of roads that go everywhere too, but it's a little unnerving.
No, like active logging roads.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, in this country, in most places, you're not going to look and see where you came from. You're just covered, you know, there's brush all around you. You don't know what the hillsides look like. You don't have a landmark to go from, you know.
Uh-huh.
I know in Arizona, you can pick a landmark, and you can always find that landmark from some high point. But here, you just don't have that opportunity. All right. So that's why I say GPS and maps are important.
Okay.
You get your bearings mixed up pretty quick out here in our woods, and you can, you know, stumble onto a road that you think was the road that you were walking at one point, and it's a completely different road, you know, 150 yards away, and not even realize exactly where you're at. So that can be a real challenge, not being able to see far and have just a mix of lots of logging roads in the area. And this is on state and federal land. This isn't even the active log timberlands, you know, so... Those are even worse sometimes.
Yeah, because
you just get lucky there that you can actually maybe see.
They're putting in new roads that the maps don't even show.
Right.
I wouldn't really recommend you hunting by yourself in this country, because drop down into a canyon after a bull. You trip, you fall, you get hurt. You don't have cell signal in these canyons.
That was another one.
For the most part, yeah. So, you know, I would recommend somebody with you, even if they're just there. Just in case, and they're not really participating in the hunt, but they're just there with you. I don't think I would, even myself, I don't like to go out by myself. I do, but I'd rather not do that.
All right, because I didn't want to be strapped to John's side, because I didn't want to, like, take away from him, but now you guys are making me feel, all right.
I told you, don't worry about it, man. It's okay. You're not going to take away anything from me, and hopefully by that time, those two guys will be tagged out anyway. We'll be hunting with them.
One of my questions was this, like, so in your guys's, like, I've seen in your guys's videos, you guys are so close to each other calling. Would it be beneficial that two guys, one goes to the right, one goes to the left, depending on where the freaking bull is coming out, and like whoever gets the shot on the bull shoots? I mean, is that a better tactic or not really?
You mean two shooters and one caller?
Yeah, two shooters, one caller. Or shit, even the freaking caller could be able to shoot, even if you were calling and I was calling.
Okay, gotcha.
You know.
So the way we do it is developed over the years. In this country, we, you know, like you said, and in the videos you can see it, you don't see very far. But what happens with these elk when you're calling them to you is they're trying to get close enough to see their opponent. And what you don't want in that thick kind of cover is your caller a long ways away from your shooter, because what will happen a lot of times is that elk will skirt around you, and you won't get the opportunity as a shooter. A lot of times the caller is where the elk is going anyway, to the caller, and the caller will have the opportunity and not the shooter. So we tend to stay close together. You know, a lot of times you're filming and you can't get far from your filmer, and no, it's just myself and Corey most of the time. So the caller is the filmer and vice versa. So we're always, you know, within sight of each other for sure.
Okay. And speaking of calling, all right, since we're on that topic right now, when I was listening to you guys call, it sounded like you guys make a lot of chuckles and you guys do a lot of challenge bugles. Explain to me, like, is that a typical sequence with these Rosies is different than, I mean, with these, with the elk out there? I mean, is it different?
I don't think it's really different. You know, once we locate a bull, and if you paid attention to the videos when I'm locating, I do chuckle, but it's not the emphasis. And when I get an answer, so now it's a one-on-one communication, I do a lot of chuckling. And it's typically bulls do that directly to another bull, and it is a warning. A challenge, a warning. I also do warning barks at them, challenge barks and whatnot. Once I get, it's just myself and that bull It's a back and forth thing. I do chuckle a lot. These Roosevelts do chuckle a lot. I know the Rocky Bulls chuckle as well. Rosie's probably chuckle a little bit more, but as far as locating, when it comes to locating, you just do that high scream, that high pitch to get it to carry a long ways.
Okay. Yeah, no, I'm good with the high scream. I'm good with that, but the location, I'm good. But the chuckles, I suck. I'm terrible with it. And I'm really good with cow calls. So how do those work? Like out here in Arizona, like cow calls is it's like our go-to. We don't even bugle. I mean, the bulls that I've called in, I would say 9 out of 10 times is with the cow. I mean, using sweet cow calls. So is that tactic not good over there, or should I just like, what are the things I should be working on right now from now until the hunt? Should I be working on that chuckle, or, I mean, explain to me what you think I should be working on.
Well, I definitely think you should be working on the chuckle. And as far as cow calling is concerned, we're targeting the herd bull, and he's going to defend his territory. These Roosevelts are extremely territorial. They don't really migrate. So the bull grows up and dies in, a 5-square-mile area or whatnot. During September, they're back home. So that's what we're targeting. It's more of a territorial thing. As far as cow calling is concerned, since we're targeting that herd bull, he's going to protect his harem from another bull. If you're if you're cow calling out there, you may call in a lot of satellites. But as far as that herd bull who already has his harem is concerned, he's not worried about you as a cow. He's more threatened by you as another bull. So, again, and how we do it is adapted to specifically taking that herd bull, bringing him closer to us to get the shot. And that bugling seems to be a ticket for us to do it like that. So,
all right.
Cow calling probably kills more elk every year than bugling. There's no question about it, even in the country we're hunting.
Okay.
It's just the way we do it and how we do it and the bulls that we're targeting, bugling is the way to get it done.
All right. So if I'm okay shooting a smaller bull, you're saying my cow calling tactics will work. However, if I want to shoot a big bull, the
herd bull,
herd Godzilla bull over there, I'm gonna try to work on my chuckling and work on being more aggressive.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, the other difficulty of it too is, I was just gonna say, locating with a cow call is hard. That's one of the reasons why, like, even some of those smaller bulls, you can't sit up on a ridge and call into this canyon with cow calls and expect them to hear you. The bugle is one of the main reasons why we, the volume of the bugle is the main reasons why we use it, because then you can reach, significantly further and try to locate those bulls further away. It's pretty rare that you get out and you call and you get one that's, 50 yards away that would actually hear cow calls. John and I had one last year that would have worked, but we stopped at some rubs and got out and bugled, but he was just on the hillside above us, probably within 100 yards. But that's not an everyday occurrence by any means. The majority of them are 2/3 of the way down into the bottom of these canyons, sitting midday where they're super comfortable and just hanging out. And, it takes us, 5 to 15 minutes to get that thing to finally respond. And once it does, then you drop in. And if you want a cow call from there, you probably could do pretty well. But trying to locate with cow calls is damn near impossible.
And it's just not as consistent, cow calling. And trust me, we've tried everything throughout the years. I didn't just, decide to do it the way I do it because it seemed cooler. It was just what was repetitive and consistent and what got the results that we're looking for. So,
but it is cooler.
Cow call. It is cooler. I think we made it cooler.
No, you guys look good doing it on video, man. I'm telling you right now.
It's and plus it's fun, man. Those bulls screaming at you and you're interacting with them one-on-one. That is a blast. To me, that's what elk hunting is.
Yeah.
Sitting blind calling, cow calling, I don't know. It's kind of boring.
I saw those. You guys use some crazy looking bugle tubes. What the hell are those things? I've never seen that before.
The shorty?
There's a shorty, but then there's like one that's like a pancake. It looked like a square.
No, the flat bat.
Oh, you're talking the flat bat. Yeah, that's old school stuff. Mm-hmm. There.
Well, I was watching as many videos as I could to like understand.
Yeah.
Listen, I'm a student. I don't care. If I'm going somewhere, I'm gonna learn what I'm gonna do. I wanna make the best of it. If this is my downtime right now, I'm practicing. This is my craft. So I gotta.
Well, I don't show all my tricks anyway on video. So you'll get to personally see some things that doesn't make video. But we'll save that for later.
All right. Good.
No, the trick to getting an answer is volume. Purely volume. The louder you are, the farther you're getting, the more elk you're going to get to respond. And all you need is one bull to respond. You get down in there, you call them, and you kill them. And it can be that simple or far more difficult, like John found out.
You know,
the idea is to get an answer, drop down in, and call a bull in. And volume is what really does that.
All right, awesome. Yeah. All right, so say... I finally get my first bull out there, and I was more thinking I was going to hunt solo, but I guess now I'm not really, now I'm going to be stuck to John's hip. So basically when we get an elk down, are we worried about bears, or are we worried about anything that I need to bring? Do I need to bring bear spray with me? Or I don't know what that, I know in Colorado, the black bears were scared of us. Like they would run away from us unless they had a cub with them, a sow with cubs. So I just want to know, what am I getting? What?
Bring a bear tag.
Bring a bear tag.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Cause that,
if
that
you means, haven't bought one yet, go get one.
It means you'll either
get cheap.
Kill one, or you'll guarantee that you won't see a bear when you have a bear tag in your pocket.
And the latter's probably more likely because they do run.
We have a lot of black bear, and we've had them try to steal our quarters before, because you know we'll take a load out and come back. But as far as we haven't came across one that's been super aggressive and tried to keep us off of our own kill. If that happened, we would pretty much take care of business, but it's unlikely that we're going to have a problem with any creatures, you know, bear or cougar, mountain lion. I mean the possibility's there. People run into them every year, but you know, we're the most feared creature in the woods, so they tend to get out of our way.
Okay. All right. So there's a couple extra questions. So are we going to be doing a lot of uphill shots, a lot of downhill shots, like 15th degree? What kind of shots should I expect? Am I going to be practicing? Like right now, how I was looking at your videos, it looks like it's going to be more frontal shots than, you know, broadside shots. I've been practicing that with my, you know, my 3D target is taking more of the frontal shot, but obviously, you know, the ideal would be, you know, for, you know, it to be broadside, but I was watching those videos and you guys seem like you take a lot of frontals. So what?
Well, we do a quartering too. It's not necessarily a straight on frontal. It's quartering too. So, you know, when they're walking, you know, they're walking right at the collar.
Correct. That's what it looks like.
The collar and shooter together. So you're looking at, just picture a quartering away and the exact opposite angle from the front. You know, those, you can kind of image it in your head.
Of course.
Uh-huh. How to get in front of the leg and into the chest cavity. And that's going to take care of business. And we had to adapt to shoot like that, because all of our elk were calling in, came straight into us. So, you know, they come straight in, they turn a little bit one direction or the other, and you can place that arrow in front of the leg. It's not a huge target, but then again, it's more than big enough to hit at 20 yards. So we typically don't take that shot any farther than that. And they give us broadside shots as well. They give us quarter and a wing shots. And my little brother is good at calling elk in. They see him, they turn, they spook, he'll bark at him, and they'll stop and turn around and look, and he'll get him a quarter and away. He does that a lot.
Okay.
So, you know, if take a shot that you're comfortable with. If it's not the one right in front of you, just wait, and he'll typically move enough to give you a different angle. So, what you don't want to do is panic and force a shot that you're never comfortable with. We can track an elk for days, which burns our entire season up. A poor shot can do that to you pretty quick. So just make sure that you're comfortable with your shooting. And if you want to practice at home, you know, go into that cat's claw or the ocotillo and, you know, just put it in your face and try to shoot through it.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
It's typical what – that's how me and John have been practicing, because yeah. I've been trying to shoot through a lot of brush and, you know, sneak the arrow through. And, you know, yeah, there's times that I freaking – nicking and it's not going in the spot that I wanted to, but we're also shooting shots at 50, 60 yards doing that. We're not shooting at 20. So I need to kind of bring in the target a little bit closer and see, you know, 20 yard, 30 yard shots and see what we're getting, what the, you know, deflections showing us and what have you.
Set a target up at 20 yards on the other side of some prickly pear and try to thread the needle through one of the little openings.
Okay.
See what comes out on the other end.
There you go.
Is there anything else that it's I should know? That, you know, to better prepare, or that I missed that I'm not thinking of, that you guys think that somebody that coming to Oregon should know? I just, those are the questions that I kind of, after watching the videos and talking with John, those are the things that I had. But if there's something that you think, like if you guys were coming out to Arizona, I'd be like, listen, you need to bring 15 by 56 binos and a tripod, and bring a Phoenix shooting bag seat, because you're going to be sitting on your ass all day long. So I want to know what you guys think I should have, what gear, whatever it is that you think that just to prepare me a little bit better, I'd appreciate it. Just let me know what it is. We could go Corey first and Shannon second.
You definitely don't need 15 by 56, so I wouldn't bring that. If you got a nice set of 10 powers, that'll be good. Obviously, rangefinder is key, because things can look deceptively different when you're looking at, you know, a tree that's got an 8-foot diameter base and you think it's, you know, X distance and the bull standing just next to it, and you try to guess, it can really throw things off. Depth perception can get pretty messed up. You know, it's similar to what you guys get down there in the desert. Things, you know, look way, way far away, and then you range that coos deer that weighs about 30 pounds and he's like 20 yards. You thought he was at 100, but it's just, you know, perception. You definitely are going to want that, you know, just to have rain gear. Whether you end up using it or not is a totally different thing. But, I mean, I've always got it with me. It's just something that it's a tool that's always in our bag just in case. You know, plan on, you know, layers, because you get up in the morning, it could be nice and cool. And then because of the humidity and stuff here, you're going to sweat your ass off sometimes in the afternoon. It just, you know, gets a little warm, and that coastal air will definitely make you sweat. So, you know, be kind of ready for that. You know, if you have a good pack that you can haul heavy weights with, do that, because one of these hindquarters on a good mature Roosevelt's going to weigh a ton. You know, much more than you would expect an elk quarter to weigh. So, you know, be prepared for that as well. And then, man, I don't know. I mean, you're going to get turned down service every day and new shampoo when you're camping with John. So you don't have to worry about any of that kind of stuff. You're going to... You're going to get breakfast served every morning.
Oh, come on.
The way the John camps.
I was coming to cook you guys breakfast every morning. What are you talking about?
Well, yeah, you beat us up every morning, that's for sure. But, yeah, no, it's you know, it's a pretty typical hunt from that perspective. Nothing super fancy. You don't need to have an ultralight backpack and backpacking gear or anything like that. No, it's not going to snow.
Okay.
So... anything else, Shannon, that you can think of?
Well, yeah, you're definitely not, I mean, it's probably the easiest hunt in the world to prepare for. We're not staying overnight out in the woods, typically. Every now and then we will, but it's very rare. The weather, even if it does rain, it doesn't really get super cold. You may see a mid-50 degree morning or something, but we also don't get up early. We don't go sit on, you know, hillsides and glass. We usually get to where we need to locate from and try to get it done. Boots are important, comfortable pair of shoes. You're walking uphill or downhill usually. It's one direction or the other. You're side hilling. There's not a lot of flat ground in this country. And just comfortable clothing, you know, because you're moving a lot. Being able to, like Corey said, clearing is key. You can, you know, dress up in the morning or in the evening and dress down in the middle of the afternoon or when you're doing your hikes. Yeah, the ability to pack weight on your pack that you currently have, making more than trips that you needed up and down those hills, can be brutal. So if the pack you're carrying can handle 60 to 80 pounds of weight, you're definitely at a benefit with that. Be prepared, you know, knives and all that good stuff. And we always have a first aid kit because people fall, get hurt quite frequently, unfortunately. Other than that, man, don't stress it. Just, we're going to have a good time, man. That's one thing I promise. May not be successful. That's just the way hunting is, but we're going to have a good time.
Listen, that's all I ask. I mean, that's the last, I don't know, 7-8 years now. That's all I care is having a good time. I want to enjoy myself. I mean, I like seeing stuff go down, but the experience to me is way better than any animal going down. Now, for John, I can't. He's isn't going down for him to have a good time. If it's not going down, he's a miserable trip. But I'm just expecting to like enjoy it, see something different, and go on an elk hunt this year because I'm going on 6 years now that I haven't. I mean, it's 5 years now that I haven't gone. I've helped the last 5 years. What, 4 people get elk and not myself, but it's time for me to put one down and I'm excited to come out there and I appreciate you guys allowing me to tag along and be a part of the crew this year.
Yeah, man.
Well, that's one of the cool things about Oregon too, is we get to hunt every year over the counter, you know, public land stuff, which is great. So, you know, it is an advantage from that perspective to have the ability to gain experience by just being out there. And hopefully by that time, you know, we'll have a lot of knowledge of what's going on in the woods, and we might be 200 miles away from where we hunted with John last year, you know? So at that point we'll know, like, if we're going to be on the North Coast or if we're going to be way, way south, it could be a completely different game. And when you get down there, the days can be much, much warmer and much more arid. The terrain changes a little bit. The bulls change a little bit. The vegetation changes. So, you know, as we get a little closer, we'll definitely touch base with you and fill you in a little more on what we're deciding to do at that point in time. But, you know, looking forward to having you out and getting to experience. It's always fun to see somebody's reaction when they get out there and they're like, we're dropping into that? Like, really? Okay. You know, it's like jumping blind into the dark, into the muddy water and, you know, off a bridge and you have no idea what's below, you know, many times that's what those canyons are like. And a lot of them, you get to the bottom and it's like a park and you're wandering around down there and you're seeing really cool old logging equipment like we did with John last year. That's probably been down there for 80 to 100 years. And you stumble across some really, really neat things. So from an experience standpoint, yeah, it'd be fun to have you. Especially if that's really honestly what you're looking for is just a really, really cool experience. And then the expectations are kept a little lower in terms of feeling pressured. Last year, we kind of felt pressured because we were leaving for Wyoming and we wanted to try to get things done while John was there. And it was just, it was a little more difficult season for us. This year will be a better opportunity for everybody, I think, because we'll have more time. We're not leaving to go anywhere and looking forward to it.
And you're coming out the best week that the season has to offer.
Yes. So.
It just gets better as September progresses. So that last week is going to be epic as long as we don't get like some monsoon hitting us.
We'll get a monsoon. Where were John? Whatever the worst possible stuff is going to happen, because I'm with John, it's definitely going to come. Now, if I was with somebody else, it's a different story. If I go with my cousin Joe, it's perfect.
Yeah. Well, like in a normal season, like last year when John was there, we would have done something completely different, which is we would have packed up and we would have headed south. And you can usually get out of that weather. You know, the weather systems aren't, you know, 300 plus miles of coastline long. They typically will hit the north or hit the south or the central, and we can kind of, you know, get away from the heavy stuff if we have to. And last year, just because we were leaving to Wyoming, we didn't have that luxury, so we stayed where we were. And this year we'll definitely be more mobile and we'll have the ability to adapt to whatever kind of demands we have placed upon us at that point in time.
All right. Awesome. Awesome. Well, guys, thank you so much for taking the time to even talk to me. If you guys want to look up those videos that I was telling you guys about in the beginning, go to Angry Spike Productions. I guess you guys could watch all those videos over there like I did, and it helped negative like 20 of the questions that I had for them. Also to John's listeners, I guess my RAM made the issue of the September Hunting Fool magazine. If you guys could just go there and vote, and my name is Anthony Stallone, just like John Stallone, but with Anthony in the front, all right? And if you guys could click it and say, I guess, vote for me, I'd appreciate it. Whatever prize there is, I promise to donate it to a young kid. So I think it's a 50mm bino. If I do get it, I will donate that to a child that does not have a pair of binos. So like I said, it's going to be on the Hunting Fool. Just go on thehuntfool.com and click on the September when it goes on September issue and just vote, and it's Anthony Stallone. All right, thanks, guys.
Well, cool. Well, I think there's a bunch of good information in that, and some stuff for people to take away, especially if you're going to be a first time hunter in for Rosie's on the West Coast there. And yeah, I'm looking forward to it, man. I'm excited. I have some redemption to do from last year, but yeah, I hope you guys are tagged out by the time we get there. Actually,
that would be nice. Yeah.
That would be really great. That way,
yep.
That way, Anthony can attach himself to one of your guys' hips, not mine.
Yeah. I think that's what's going to happen anyway. We'll split up into two groups, cover more ground.
Yeah, yep. Yeah, no.
Just works better like that.
Just messing around. All right, well, cool, guys. I will talk to both of you soon, and Anthony, you know, I'll see you probably the next day or so.
30 seconds.
Well, that too. But see you in 30 seconds. But all right, guys. Well, we'll talk to you soon. Take it easy.
Thanks. All right, thanks.
Cool. Thanks, John.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Anthony. Right, take care.
Thanks. Bye.